Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That was gross. I hate hand stuff.
And he was an idiot.
Yeah, he was dumb.
You hate hand stuff?
Hand injuries.
No, I know what you meant.
Yeah, shut up.
Welcome to Scream Queen,
a podcast about scary movies
from people not typically depicted in scary movies.
I.e. us. Drea, how's it going? Again, season 4, back in the studio. It's good to see your face, and not just your face, it's good to be in the same room with you.
Right?
You know?
I think I've seen you how many times in the past year and a half? I can't count it on one hand.
Yeah.
It's pretty pathetic. I'm really sad about it.
But I will say that you, more than anybody else in my life, consistently came, even though you were in San Diego during most of the pandemic, came up and gave me care packages.
Yes, I did.
Some of your mother's cooking, I believe, which was...
And my father's.
So good. And mm-hmm. your father's. And it
and
was...
And some of mine.
I felt very taken care of, I will say.
You are so welcome.
So, again, Drea's classic segment, Have Y'all Seen, pulling something from the horror archives, not the whore archives, which she usually does.
So good, bitch.
We're going to get into the short film, A Strange Thing About the Johnsons, our Act 2 main discussion. We're going to talk about Werewolves Within, and our Scream Queen of the Week is Haley Law as Tess in Spontaneous. You might remember Haley as being one of the new Josie and the Pussycats from the Riverdale TV series, and that's pretty much it. Why don't you take it away, Drea?
And off we go. This is a short film by Ari Aster. Before we got into Hereditary and
Summer Stan or
Midsommar.
Something like that.
He directed The Strange Thing About the Johnsons.
And it is
and
strange.
Where the fuck he came up with this shit, I don't know, because he wrote this and he directed it. Mm-hmm. And you can find the film on YouTube. It's like 30 minutes long. And it tells the story of, it's this unorthodox family. There's something strange going on between this father and son. And you can't quite figure it out. On the wedding day of this son, the groom disappears and the wife goes to find him, and the husband, he's in the backyard, like doing shit to his dad.
Blowing his daddy's
he's blowing
dick.
Blowing his dad.
He's blowing his daddy's dick. Then you understand that this child, he's got it just fixated on his father.
From a very young age, he became fixated on his father, and his father is not interested, and he's pursuing his father, and he's actually technically the predator in a sense, because his father can't say no or whatever, but he's like dominating him. He's basically beating him down into a shell of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And made him like his puppet thing. And his mother is fully aware that all of this shit is, well, she's not fully aware, but she knows
something's going on,
but doesn't want to admit to it. And his wife, his new wife knows, but doesn't want to admit to it. And it finally comes to a head where the father, he's writing a book, a tell-all book, confessing and, you know, everything that happened. And the son finds it
mm-hmm.
and beats the shit out of him.
And the wife just listens. I believe she's like hearing this bullshit go down. I mean, it's like, it is a horror movie in the sense that it is horrible.
Horrific. Yeah.
And what I will say is that I'd never seen this before. Dre recommended it, and we saw it in her apartment, and I was like, what the literal fuck? But in the gaze of the camera, and what Ari Aster chooses to linger on and move away from, you see, I saw what would become his gaze in Hereditary and Midsommar. Mm-hmm. There's something, it's not cartoonish necessarily, but there's something a little off about it. There's something on the edge of the table for me that it was like, I get how he looks at this world.
Yeah, the subject matter is not appeasing, but the way he delivers it is so interesting.
I mean, it does seem that he's interested in taboo.
Mm-hmm. You know? Beyond. And he's not afraid of pushing those limits. And the fact that he did this with a black family, too,
is
a very interesting choice. Because black families don't want to get into this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It exists in all communities. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we definitely don't want to get into those ugly truths that exist out there in some families.
Did he ever say why he decided to make the family black? Or like,
because I didn't even get into it like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there is a reason for that. There has to be. But it could have been a subconscious decision, I suppose.
But I mean, even still, like, again, depicting this perversion in suburbia, mm-hmm. you know, and in a family unit that seems strong and safe. And when you look into this depiction of horror, right, and then you look to Hereditary, again, inside of a family, or I think Midsommar, which was a scary movie bathed in sunlight, you know, these things happening in places they shouldn't happen, you know, like, you expect scary movies to be under the cover of darkness.
Yeah.
You know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all that
stuff.
That's
where scary things are.
As soon as the sun goes down, that's when the killer comes out, right? So I think there's this way that he subverts your expectation of like where horror lies.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I would assume in a dynamic like this, if you were to depict incest, it would be the parental figure with the power mm-hmm. preying on the child.
That's how it's all often done.
But
and
this
that's
one,
how
it's
it plays out in life.
The child preying on the parental figure,
mm-hmm.
which is where the twist comes.
Mm-hmm.
It was really uncomfortable.
Very. 30 minutes is all it
I
needed
can
to
do
be.
More than 30 minutes of that bullshit.
The climactic, you know, ending is, yeah, it comes to a head with Mama and the son.
Yeah, I can't deal with it any longer.
She's had enough.
Mm-hmm. Does the father kill? He throws himself in front of a bus or a car, or
he steps off the curb and gets hit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He doesn't throw himself, mm-hmm. but he's like backing up, I think, and then he gets hit and run over.
And his manuscript, like he was going to write about the abuse, but also being complicit in it, and
he was owning up to all his shit. So I mean, technically, he might have stepped into that street on purpose. I have to look at that again. I've actually seen the film a few times. It's always uncomfortable every time I watch it.
I mean, you watched it again. I've only seen it the one time, and I was like, yeah, I think that's
enough. I can withstand some.
You can, though. You can. You are made of a different metal than me.
Yes. I mean, but like when it comes to psychological weird, like off-putting shit like that, I'm intrigued. I want to learn about what makes people tick.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. People are scary.
What makes them tick, and also what unravels them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I find most curious, mm-hmm. because there are little things that we do in our day-to-day lives that I think, if put under strain or stress, could extrapolate into a larger problem.
Yeah.
Either you put ordinary characters in extraordinary situations, or you put extraordinary characters in ordinary situations and see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching the unraveling of this like suburban family, which I'm here for. Because fuck I mean, not like fuck families, but I just
no,
mean
fuck
like
that archetype.
Yeah, like that nuclear kind of thing that we're fed, that we're supposed to feed into,
mm-hmm.
right? That if we don't exist as people, as fully realized adults, unless we're in that type of family, anything that unravels that type of family, I'm here for.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'm so here for that shit, and it says that it says so much about that, and trust in these. Over in Pasadena and where all these behind closed doors, behind these multi-million-dollar mansions,
mm-hmm.
just imagine mm-hmm. what these motherfuckers are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the money in the world, they doing some weird ass shit.
They're
dirty. I promise you.
Yeah.
It's Illuminati and all that shit.
But there's this also this idea that once you've had this nuclear family, that all of your troubles go away. You know, that like that solves something inside of you, that that solves something in your character. When, you know, challenges and undoings exist in every iteration of life, whether or not you're in one of these like sort of strongholds of family. So I just like anything that chips away at that illusion.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for recommending this. Also, fuck you.
You're welcome. All right. So our main discussion, we're getting into Werewolves Within.
Yes. This is a new film. Actually, it's based off of a video game.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which
like
I didn't
know.
Like
a virtual reality or some shit.
Yeah. Ubisoft produced it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a whodunit. It's in a small town. It's sort of like, it gives me like Northern Exposure vibes. It's just like an isolated town.
Yeah.
You know, snowed in. There's this new policeman in town, I believe.
Played by Sam Richardson.
Yeah, Sam Richardson comes in. He meets like the one postal worker.
Played by the AT&T lady.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And she just kind of takes him around. That's why she looks so familiar.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I don't know who this bitch is, but I know this bitch.
Uh-huh.
And she kind of takes him around, like a tour of town, and he kind of meets all the eccentric weirdos, among them Michaela Watkins, who I love, and Cheyenne Jackson. And what's his name, Guillermo?
Harvey Guillen.
Yeah. As a gay couple, sort of new agey. You know, like, I think it also, Werewolves Within is a movie, I think, that will be illustrative of what it's like to be alive now. Because in this small town, you still have, like, the neoliberals and the Trumpers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, they're sort of, like, clashing and in this small microcosm. And then you've got like the survivalist who's out in the woods by himself. You've got a couple of meth heads or something. They're on some opioids. I don't know what they're on, but they're on some. And there's like the innkeeper and then like the weird scientist. What you realize is that some people have gone missing. Among them, the innkeeper's husband, who they just assume has left with a mistress. And things kind of come to a head at the inn where they decide to all kind of gather because there is something on the outside stalking them, but they sort of realize there's werewolves within.
Oh, I see what you did there. You're so clever.
Yeah. The call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
I really liked this. It was silly. You know, it was a silly film. It was funny. The stakes never seemed super high. I really, really, really liked the main character.
Yeah.
Sam Richardson. I don't remember his name in the thing, but
Finn Wheeler.
He was so charming. It sort of, he gave me a little bit of like Ted Lasso vibes. Like he's just like a really charming character who makes everyone like him.
Mm-hmm.
People from across political spectrums. And he has an unerring enthusiasm for what it is that he does, for being in this town, even though he's kind of beta, you know, like he kind of like lets people, or at least like, you know, he's got this like girlfriend or whatever who's like, who's broken up with him, even though he doesn't know it. But he's unerringly charming.
As he is in like everything he's in. He's so just like, something about him's very delightful. His face is just like, the heck, you're just really adorable.
His optimism is like, we'll figure it out. Don't worry. We got this. Like continually throughout the film, as people are dropping off, as people are psychologically unraveling, as people are shooting themselves in the hand and shit like that, he's kind of always like, no, we got this. We got this. We got this. Until the twist comes at the end and he's like, oh, fuck. But I will say, when they were in that lady's crash pad or whatever, and they were playing around with them axes, you know, when they were throwing them axes, I knew that something was going to happen with them axes.
Duh.
That was like a plant. That was the Chekhov's axe. I was like, if you see an axe, they're going to use an axe.
Yeah, you don't introduce a weapon like that. It's just a classic, straightforward clue. There's a weapon here, so somebody's going to get hit with that weapon eventually.
Mm-hmm. Did you know, suspect, or otherwise have any portent of who the werewolf was going to be?
No. No, I thought it, you know, I believed every person they kept alluding to.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a great job of, you know, getting me off the scent. Who was, I can't think of his name, but the same guy that was from True Detective, well, if you haven't seen the first True Detective, sorry, but the killer in True Detective, he was the guy living in the woods, the cabin dude who comes to his rescue at the end. I can't think of his name, but I like him. He's really, he plays all kinds of characters. Usually he plays more of like a psychopath. So he was low-key a psychopath, like living in the mountains, but he had like a, he's like a salt of the earth kind of man. And I liked their relationship between him and Finn's character.
I would definitely let him do terrible things to me.
I already know you would. Is his name
He's big.
Is his name Glenn? Oh, I think his name is Glenn Fleshler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He played Emerson. He's the one, again, like in subverting expectations, like he's the one you kind of suspect because he's introduced as a menace.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's off. He's just a little off, a lot off.
But then, you know, he's kind of, he comes in at the end, kind of saves the day, is kind of charming. It's like, all right, yes.
They're banter. Like, all those little conversations, they're small, but they make the movie.
Bust it down. We'll let him. Who were your favorite ancillary characters? Who were your favorite background characters in this movie?
I was feeling Michaela always. And Harvey.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's great in everything.
Everything. And yeah, Harvey Guillen, I love him. He played
Joaquin.
Him and Cheyenne Jackson, they were funny together. But I really particularly like Harvey because what, you know, what we do in the shadows is everything. Yeah, so he just kind of popped up on the scene. So it's nice to see him.
Oh, I'm so excited for the new season, by the way. Oh my God, I can't wait to see what they do with Guillermo.
With all of them. And Guillermo's coming back as a vampire hunter.
I know. I miss it. I miss all of them. I miss Nadia. Anyway, yeah, Cheyenne Jackson I didn't like as much. I mean, I just don't prefer him.
But, I mean, they were funny together. They were fine.
Yeah. We were talking about Vermont earlier. This is like a Vermont town. They seemed like the New Yorkers who come to Vermont.
Yeah. He wore his little fur hats and he played that role very... He was kept, a kept woman.
That's it. That vibe I got from him. Very rude that Cheyenne Jackson got killed with the maple tap. That was not cool.
I mean, I need to do a tally of all the kills in this movie. I'm not sure which one ranks where. Like, what was your favorite?
I think the maple tap was the one that I was most surprised by. I mean, like, I knew everyone was going to die, but that was like... We didn't really get to see it. That was a thing. It was kind of off screen, but I thought that could have been very inventive if it wanted to go a little bit more gory. That dude who like saw the werewolf and like got his hand shot off.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The redhead dude.
Yeah. That was gross. I hate hand stuff.
And he was an idiot. It was okay. He sucked.
I mean, he was dumb. Yeah, he was dumb.
You hate hand stuff?
Hand injuries.
No, I know what you meant.
Yeah, shut up. The other thing that I liked about this movie is like it kind of went against the idea that people come together. You know, that like I think there's a narrative trope in Hollywood of the like people coming together to face off against the bad guy. And these were just a bunch of people for whom their divisions were so great, they could never come together. That idea that we are our own worst enemy. You know, what sort of changed the game for me was Walking Dead, because in a lot of, not all of them, but in a lot of the zombie movies that I grew up watching, it was a group of survivors who banded together to face this one thing. And the Walking Dead, that first season, I was like, oh, you don't get to choose who you survive with. Some people who survive are fucking white supremacists. You know what I mean? Like, that was really fucking scary to me. That was like, what if I had to survive with the people I went to high school with? That would fucking suck. And this is kind of similar in the sense that like the people who you survive with, they're not friends. They don't like each other. They don't want the best for each other. They're very selfish. All of them. These are a bunch of selfish characters who couldn't care less about their neighbors, who would push them in front of a werewolf if they had to in order to survive.
Yeah.
Which I thought I thought was super realistic, especially of the times that we live in now and how divisive and how also just like people, two different people seeing the same thing, having a different interpretation seemed very sort of like Fox News era. Like what you saw wasn't what you saw. So I thought that was really cleverly done. The AT&T lady as the vampire was a twist.
Werewolf.
Yeah. Same thing. But what I thought she did well was went from like chipper girl next door to menacing.
Oh, hell yeah. I didn't know AT&T girl had it in her.
She has the range. She has the range.
She went there. She said it with her chest.
Yeah. And it was almost like seductive. Mm-hmm. You know, it was still flirty. It was still kind of like, I kind of want you to kill me.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
I mean, that's the whole, that's like half the allure. It's like, bite me. Mm-hmm. Like, please do. Mm-hmm. I kind of want you to.
And it turns out that, like, she wasn't actually the town's mail person, that person had been killed and she'd, like, took over the role or whatever, yeah, and nobody was getting her packages.
Step into the position, yeah.
Yeah. She had taken advantage of the main character's optimism mm-hmm. and kindness and was like, you're so simple. You're such a beta. You let anybody walk on you. And I feel like that in that way, like, even though he's not a final girl, he's a final boy, that's the kind of journey that the final girl goes through.
Yeah.
Which is like to learn her strength and her resolve and her bottom line. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he learned in this
yeah.
movie.
No, he's absolutely, it's not a scream queen, but I got those vibes from his character. Like, you survived this and we have been cheering for you throughout this whole film. You don't have the aggro aggression of most leading males in films like that. Like, it's just different. Like, it was his demeanor that makes it like you're really rooting for him, mm-hmm. almost in a way like you would for a final girl.
Yeah. I think this was maybe the second or third movie I saw in theaters after pandemic. It's not after pandemic. We're still in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, quarantine. And it was, I think, here's the thing. It was the same thing with A Quiet Place 2. Which was, I don't know, this is clouding, I think, my judgment of this particular film. It was like, I don't know if I like this or I'm happy to be back. You know what I mean? Where I was I'm really enjoying myself, but I think I'm enjoying the experience of being in the movies.
I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll like something and then go back to it and I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? It's just because of the mood I was in and I'm connecting with it at that time. There was a time we didn't even think we're going to go back to movie theaters. Yeah. That thought crossed my mind and it made me so sad
because my two favorite things to do in the entire world are go to the movies and sing, and I was like, am I not going to be able to do that one thing that I love more than anything else? But then, you know, and like the whole movie thing just wasn't the same, you know. We could do watch parties and all that kind of stuff. It still wasn't the same. And I will tell you right now, anybody out there in Radio Land who has access to an Alamo Draft House, when they play that thing in the beginning before the movie starts where it shows like pictures of people in movies and like characters watching movies.
Do you cry?
I do every fucking time, bitch. I tear the fuck up.
The first time I saw that, I cried. I was like,
I'm happy to be back.
And then they were handing out free shit. And
I got a free pint.
Yeah, I got.
Then I really cried.
I got a free chips and queso. So your favorite.
Oh my God, literally is my favorite. Anything else to say about Werewolves Within? I mean, I think as a derivation of the werewolf trope, I think this movie existed in a queerer, definitely post 2016 Trump election America in a way that was, I think, fairly annoying, but also very satisfying.
I concur. So yeah, Werewolves Within. Give it a check out. Wait, check it out.
You need to learn your words.
You can kiss my butthole. All right. Our act three, Scream Queen of the Week. We're getting into spontaneous and we're covering Haley Law as Tess.
Yes. So Tess is the best friend to the main character. The thing that happens in this movie is that people start to spontaneously combust. This happens to a girl in calculus class. It happens to people all over. And the parents and the administration, they're really trying to find out what this is because it's only happening amongst these high schoolers at this school. So they're like, what is the pathogen? You know, they quarantine them. Again, very traumatic for me to watch a quarantine scene. What I liked about Tess, well, first of all, once again, Tess was one of the Josie and the Pussycats in the new new-ish Riverdale series. And I mean, she's black and she lives to the very end. So, scream queen. But, you know, largely she exists in this world with her best friend and they are, for all intents and purposes, a unit. You know, they've had each other's back. There's a new guy who comes to school who the main character kind of, like, you know, has a crush on, like, falls in love with. But, like, you get the sense that, like, Tess has to vet this person first. Like, he has to pass the test before he can get to the main character and get into her heart. And I will say also that, like, I got a little, I don't think I'm the only one, but I got a little lesbianic vibe from the two of them, because they ended up living together on the beach, which was their plan from the, they'd always wanted to live together on the beach, and that's how they end the movie.
Yeah, they was super coded. They never said it, but there was something going there for sure.
It was in the water.
In the water.
It was a little gay in
magic
the water.
Magic in the water, yeah.
But there, I don't think we ever actually saw anybody explode like a VFX thing. We would just see the reactions.
Yeah.
And we would see like the blood and all that kind of stuff, which was kind of cool.
It was effective.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never needed to see. Did we see people explode?
I think we saw entrails.
Yeah.
I don't think, I can't remember ever actually seeing.
I would remember if I saw like a head, you know, bust open like in a Cronenberg film or some shit. Like, but yeah, it, when homeboy dies, you know, which is, that was really messed up.
That was so fucked up, especially because she was like, there you are, there you are. And then you just kind of see like thing. And I think you see his jaw.
No, he had blood on his face and then it just turns to her and then it's just red. So you don't see like.
I feel like a part of him like hit her face because she had like an injury afterwards. Because like
she just had blood all over her.
It was fucked up. It was fucked.
There's no jaw, Tommy.
I will go back and there's going to be a jaw and I'm going to put that shit on Instagram and I'm going to tag you. I'm going to tag you.
You better not tag me. I'm blocking you. You're blocked.
But I thought, you know, as a, not a morality play, but like as a metaphor for hormones, you know, the sort of explosion of hormones and that and the infatuation, you know, that thing that happens. I remember having crushes on people in high school and it felt overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It did feel like you were under the influence of something. I definitely felt like before alcohol and drugs, crushes were the, I think, biggest source of mind alteringness for me, because you really see through rose tinted glasses when you have a crush on somebody. You know, like I remember when I was younger and I had nothing better going for me and I would get obsessed with people. They would be the first people that I thought of when I woke up in the morning or the last people I thought of at night, or, you know, you'd write them on your notebook or some shit like that. Like that's how powerful those seemed to me at a young age when I first started getting them. I can remember those people too. And I look back like,
what the fuck was I thinking?
What the fuck were you thinking? But it is so all-encompassing and so powerful, and that's kind of what I felt with this metaphor, was like people being overcome by their hormones or whatever.
Yeah.
And of course it had to exist in high school, you know. And they never really, I can't remember if they had like a pill, right, or something started, ended up working so they wouldn't blow up, but it was still kind of like, it was spontaneous, like you didn't know if that person next to you that sat in front of you,
they never cured it. Like they basically could still blow up at any time. Mm. They don't know what caused it. But I too agree with the high school hormones metaphor.
Largely what it extrapolated for me was this idea that it's hard to get close to people when you know they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was more immediate in this movie because, you know, she's forging this romantic relationship while people are exploding all around her and it ends up happening to the person that she's like fixated and falls in love with or whatever. But I've been thinking about this lately, like as an older person, as a person who, you know, my father's wife passed away recently, that it is scary. It can be very scary to be attached to somebody or to love somebody because of the threat of their eventual leaving or of your leaving too. And this, it just kind of encapsulated that a little bit more and like put that under a bell jar.
Absolutely.
But I was compelled. I kind of liked it. I'm not going to lie.
I liked the film. I didn't know what to expect from it. And yeah, I watched it earlier on in the pandemic. Even though it's a stressful film, like it's not meant to put you at ease, I felt at ease watching it. Like it was the first time I was able to like sit and comfortably like watch a film for a while. Other than that, I was watching, you know, bullshit Tiger King and all that, whatever, all that nonsense. But and like reality television and all those things that just like were causing me so much like anxiety, just thinking about the way the world works is just so shitty already. So I don't know. This film was kind of a breath of fresh air. The only thing that didn't work was that homegirl's wig. What the fuck was that wig?
I didn't say nothing.
I said it. Come on now. That was a hot mess. The fuck? It's not like she don't got hair.
Yeah.
Why would you put that on her head? That was a mess.
The person who did the hair was not.
They should be fired.
I think the worst wig for me was the one that Emma Roberts wore in The Hunt. Did you ever see that one?
Did I see it with you?
No.
No, but I did see it.
It was the last movie I saw in theaters before pandemic.
I don't even remember her in the film. Did she die like early on?
Yeah, she played like a Tommy Lauren type.
Yeah. I remember she was like in the field and running or something. But I don't remember her wig, no.
It was worse than this one. But this one was still pretty bad.
Yeah.
So
Tessa's hair looked real good, though.
You know, it did. She definitely, I feel like she was like, let me do this. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Y'all don't know how to, you don't know what you're doing.
So Haley Law, you are our scream queen of the week. And you know what I mean? Next time, be the main character.
Scream Queen is produced by Kenya and Alex from Domino Sound. I am Drea Washington. You can find me on Instagram at Hey Girl Hey. That's HeyGirlHey.
And I am Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HeyTeebs on Instagram. You can also find us at Scream Queen Podcast on Instagram as well. And in the scary movie of your life,
you better
Scream Queen.
Queen.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.